Up next, listen to the future of the internet with WebTalk and hear the latest news and trends keeping those electronic circuits and broadband connections buzzing.
This week, we talk about the Google IPO, Gmail. We check out the Mozilla Foundation with the new Mozilla browser and Firefox browser with President Mitchell Baker. We also look into downloadradio.org with its creator, Peter York.
Stay connected. WebTalk is coming up next.
WebTalk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com.
Welcome to WebTalk at WebTalkRadio.com. I'm Rob Greenlee, and thank you for listening to us and joining us again from all over the globe. And we keep you plugged into the latest net trends and the coolest internet devices. Dana's in the studio.
I'm in the house.
You are in the house.
And it's great to be here one more week. It's a summer. It's glorious. It's the Olympics time. We're having a wonderful time on the web. Thank you so much for joining us another week. We've got a lot of topics to cover this week.
Yes, we certainly do. Google makes its IPO liftoff, and some of Google's employees are only half as rich as they thought they were going to be.
Speaking of Google, Gmail, the beloved Gmail, gives alerts.
The Olympic Games website's traffic skyrockets.
Windows XP Service Pack 2, upgrade caution.
In our digital mailbag, and we're going to talk about an email from Nick in Australia who says that I need to take a big drink of water every time I do the show.
Rob, you are a big drink of water.
I guess I am.
Rob's 6'8". He can barely fit behind that microphone.
Or that it's desk here. My knees always hit the counter. Yeah.
Not big in the other way. He's just tall. He's a basketball player guy. On the show this week, we'll be joined by Peter York. He's the co-creator of a new radio website called downloadradio.org. He's also co-host and creator of Seattle Wireless TV at tv.seattlewireless.net. Peter built much of the streaming technology at Boeing, the airline manufacturer, back in the early days when streaming was just started, and he works on community wireless projects. He's also guest co-hosting this week on kinradio.com along with Andy Abramson. He's going to be talking about downloadradio.org and its use of BitTorrent P2P to offer searchable and downloadable radio shows, just like WebTalk.
One of the things that they discovered about using BitTorrent is that the more people that you use it, the faster your downloads get. It actually delivers a better download experience than if you'd done it sort of the old traditional HTTP or FTP way of doing it. It's like getting bandwidth for free and getting it for twice as fast.
Later on the show today, we're going to be joined by Mitchell Baker, who's the president of the Mozilla Foundation, and she's going to tell us about the Mozilla and Firefox web browser and how they're built in a true, pure, open-source development process and why that process for this nonprofit foundation may be a significant industry-changing way software gets written in the future. And she's going to also tell us about Mozilla's cool alternative web browsers and powerful Thunderbird email client.
What we have done in the last year or 18 months is to rewrite the application layer. So we have a new browser known as Mozilla Firefox and a new email client, Mozilla Thunderbird. The application layer itself is totally new and great. Mm-hmm. The underlying layer of the infrastructure is the same. So we get the benefit of all the stability and the maturity and the performance that we've spent years developing in the infrastructure, plus the benefits of lightweight, next generation new browsing and mail applications on top.
All right, kiddos, let's take a little walk down memory lane at what happened on the web this past week.
Yes, Google's IPO took off this week, late this past week, and what they saw was a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people. Their shares jumped about 18%.
Well, they jumped and they went back down that hill again. It ended up about where it started, didn't it?
Well, up, and it actually stayed up. Actually, through the end of Friday, the share price was up around $108 a share. So at a launch price of $85, they actually went up and stayed up through the end of trading. So come Monday, this coming week, Google's going to be trading on the upside. So we'll just have to follow that and see what happened. As we look out in the next week, maybe we'll see a drop, but who knows? Maybe it'll stay that way for a week or two. But the initial offering day actually shot the price up to about $100 in trading and closed at $100.33. Each of the co-founders of Google garnered about $40 million apiece, which is quite a bit less than what they were originally set to gain on the IPO at $130 million. And the reason for that is they backed off on the amount of shares that they were offering. But each one of them still have a holding of about $3 billion in Google. And it's being traded under the symbol Goog, G-O-O-G, which is kind of cool.
It's bizarre, is what it is.
Well, it's cool in a way. I mean,
Goog. Speaking of good old Goog, you've heard of Goog's Gmail. We have Gmail. And maybe a few of you have gotten invites. I don't know. But it's kind of something that's not really rolled out 100%. And you know what? I have not been using mine, Rob. I don't know about you. You know, it's supposed to be a real cool factor, but the fact of the matter is you have to go to Google, you have to log in, you have to find out if anybody sent you anything. It's kind of a hassle when you have to check three or four different email sources. Well, they've solved that. They have just rolled out in beta this past week an alert system. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's called the Gmail Notifier, and it's a downloadable application that you get, and it's still in its beta form, and you have to be kind of a beta tester right now for the Gmail service, and not everybody has access to that yet, but I'm sure that'll be changing soon. But it basically installs as a service on your PC, and it basically goes in as an icon in your systems tray and notifies you when you get an email, and it shows you, I guess in a little pop-up window, the subject line, the sender, and a little excerpt of that email message.
Oh, so it doesn't say, you've got Goog.
No, that's Gmail, not Goog, but yeah, I understand.
All right, in case you've just been crawling out from under that rock or that cave or the proverbial, you know, coming from outer space, the Olympics have hit the earth. and guess what? It hit the web as well. Nielsen Net Ratings came out with all the numbers. They've, I guess, seen huge increase in percentage of numbers of traffic going to sites that are featuring the Olympics. The first one was zaptoit.com, which I thought was unusual because that's like a TV listing site. And then it dawned on me.
Yeah, it's TV listing.
Everybody's looking up where they can watch it.
And it jumped, 236% and up to 1.3 million unique visitors for the week ending August 15th.
And, of course, you would expect in America, NBC Universal, which is the property that kind of owns the NBCOlympics.com website, which in the U.S. is the main site to go to, that jumped up about 110% this week, 2.2 million unique visitors.
That total was actually for the overall NBC properties, of which the NBCOlympics.com was about 60% of the traffic. So it's a significant number compared to NBC's normal traffic. Yeah, if you compare this to the 2002 Winter Olympics, it's attracted about 27% more unique visitors this year. So we're seeing about a 20% increase in the amount of people going to the Olympics website compared to the last time.
And besides the ones we mentioned, just if you just want to kind of check up on the real official website, go to Athens2004.com. That's the official worldwide site. Okay, Microsoft came up with a solution after a lot of people waiting for XP users. Anybody who has XP, Service Pack 2 has just been released. And I think there's now some cautionary tales to be told.
This upgrade, as normally what happens with Windows software, is that there's usually some bugs that come with it. And there's a lot of security people that are concerned that even this SP2 upgrade is going to have some problems as well. And there's a lot of people kind of cautioning people to maybe not upgrade using this service pack quite as quickly as everybody would like to do with this. Over the next month or so, I'm sure Microsoft will be updating the service pack and improving it. But there are some vulnerabilities that are being talked about by the security industry right now. So just go slow. Don't upgrade your PC to XP, SP2 too quickly here.
You know, what's the deal with technology? Do you want to be an early adopter on things? Do you want to wait and let bugs be fixed before you start doing them? I mean, not just this, but just about any kind of beta testing of any new program.
Well, I think if it's new coming out, it's fairly safe to say, and it's really been proven, the Microsoft software, is that you wait till there's been fixes come out, because Microsoft's got a real history of offering those. I know I do it constantly on my web servers.
You have a lot of them to upgrade. Well, let's get into the digital mailbag. We heard from Nick in Australia. G'day, Rob, he says. Love your show, mate. I listen from Australia. could you maybe please put some Australian content in an episode? Hey, why not? Why not, Rob? I mean, Nick has a good point.
Well, yeah. I mean, he certainly does. And actually, one of our past co-hosts was from Australia. So Pat Scanlon, he was with us for about a year or so. But you're exactly right. We'd love to have some content coming out of Australia. So, well, Nick, if you have some companies down there that you want to refer to us that we'll feature on the show, we're happy to get them on.
Rob, you missed what he said. Please don't think I'm rude, but could you please sometimes have a drink while you're broadcasting, as your mouth always sounds really dry. Okay, go ahead, Rob.
Well, okay, I'm drinking right now.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
It's so good.
Anyway, thank you, Nick, and drinking is good. Drinking water is good. Okay.
And if you want to send us an email, send it to rob@webtalkradio.com, and that would be a great place to send it to. Or you can send it to dana@webtalkradio.com. Support for Web Talk every week is provided by, actually, we've got a new sponsor, and it's Anonymizer Software. And they're offering a package of three great software tools that will clean up any and all of your hidden spyware problems, spam email problems, and make your computer basically invisible to hackers on the net and make your identity really private. So go check out the Anonymizer software package. There's a link to it on our website, and they're offering a $40 discount on a $90 software package bundle. Total price of $49.95, and to get the discount, you just go to getprivatenow.com and enter my name, Rob, and that's getprivatenow.com, and just enter my first name. We're also supported by Serenade Systems, and WebTalk is officially available now for download from Serenade Audio, and it enables you to schedule and automatically download WebTalk Radio, NPR, Ken Radio, and over 300 other top talk, sports, and entertainment programs right to your MP3 player. So go check it out at serenadesystems.com/WebTalk.
Web.com, one of the best names on the web, web.com. Come on, three-letter domain name. Well, they're also a sponsor of WebTalk, and they do a great job helping you register a domain name that you want and also a place that you could have your website hosted. There's low as $7.95 a month, and you can even register a domain as low as $4.95 a year. So definitely check out web.com.
Yeah, check them out.
Also, InfoCreek.com is a low-cost website design service. They're working on our site. We understand it's just days away from a launch of a brand new WebTalk site, thanks to InfoCreek.com. Up next, we're going to be talking to Peter York. He's the co-creator of a great new radio site called downloadradio.org. You don't want to miss learning about how that works. And also, he works on Seattle Wireless TV at tv.seattlewireless.net.
This is WebTalk Radio. You have probably heard about the three big online threats we face every day when online. They're talked about on the news all the time and on Web Talk, like unknown spyware and adware that may invade your PC. Spyware tracks your keystrokes and harvests passwords and sends this info to criminals all over the world. The other two are online identity theft and spam, but have you actually done something about these vulnerabilities on your PC? I am very excited to tell you about a sponsor offer that is for Web Talk listeners only. A very special package that cannot be beat that will keep your PC safe and secure. You may have heard about the folks at Anonymizer Software, and they are offering a three-pack software bundle that includes Anonymizer 2004, Anonymizer Spyware Killer, and MailShell Anti-Spam Desktop. And that is a complete and total privacy solution and will clean up any and all of your hidden problems and make your computer invisible on the net. Being a listener to the show, and thanks to the folks at Anonymizer, you qualify for a $40 discount on the $90 software package and get the complete Anonymizer bundle for only $49.95. All you have to do to get the discount is visit getprivatenow.com and enter my first name, Rob. And that is getprivatenow.com and just enter my first name.
It's all about convenience. Serenade Audio is a revolutionary new service that's redefining the MP3 player listening experience, allowing you to listen to what you want, when you want, anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. With Serenade Audio, you can download Web Talk Guides, plus over 300 news, talk, sports, and entertainment programs are available as well, and they can all be downloaded to your MP3 player with just one click. Easy and convenient. Now for a limited time, when you sign up for Serenade Audio, you'll receive over 100 music channels for your PC absolutely free. To learn more, visit Serenade Audio on the web at serenadesystems.com/webtalk.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and Danny Greenlee's in here with me. And we have a special guest in here, don't we?
Oh, yeah. It's really nice to be joined again by Peter York. Peter York is the creator of downloadradio.org and a really good friend of the Web Talk guys, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. He's in here all the time.
I am. I love this place. I love the studio. We're just hanging here.
Well, yeah, because you're doing Ken Radio this week. KenRadio.com.
Yeah, KenRadio.com.
And next week, you guys.
And next week.
Oh, that's right. That's exactly
he's Ken.
Right.
Yeah, I'm virtual Ken wherever he's disappeared and we don't know where he is.
That's right. And we're doing that in the studio here.
In the Web Talk Radio studio.
For the next, I don't know, what, 7 days, 6 days, something like that. Yeah.
Peter, for all you guys who aren't aware of him, is just a fascinating pedigree on him. It could be the best in show. I don't know. Technologically speaking, he's done so much, worked for Boeing for a long time. Why don't you tell us what you did at Boeing?
Oh, sure. I started my career there as a program manager for the Boeing 777 computer-based training program.
Mm-hmm. So, that's very cool.
Yeah. So back in 1991, we were wandering around the industry asking people, hey, has anyone ever built a multimedia keyword tagging system? And of course, just getting blank stares at people.
91?
Yeah, back in 91.
What the heck is that?
Yeah, what the heck is that? In 1996, we started using streaming media on the Boeing intranet. Which was pretty sophisticated. By the time I left, there were probably about 100,000 people on the Boeing intranet doing streaming media, both video and audio content. It was everything from talking heads to assembly level videos. In fact, we did a lot of work with the guys that actually do all of the assembly. And in fact, we'd go out and we'd shoot video of folks, here's how the best way to drill holes in the wings or something, or here's how you install a wiring bundle in an airplane.
And that's a great use for it. And wasn't Boeing one of the first to really implement that across a corporate network?
I think they were the first enterprise, to do it on their intranet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were working for
the Exodus folks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I worked for Exodus. I was their director of technology there, and I built their content delivery network, and because we had a big streaming network there as well, and had customers like Microsoft and Lucasfilm, and you name it. It was Sony Pictures, and it was a who's who of stuff. In fact, we got to do a little work on Episode 2, which was kind of fun for Lucasfilm. Yeah,
wow.
It was a pretty exciting time, and got to see everybody. I mean, I got to see the Google guys when there was just two dudes. lots of .coms and .bombs.
Oh yeah, well, that was right during the .com boom period.
Yeah, though. Absolutely. Yeah, so that was a fun time.
Now, what one of your more recent ventures here is you're doing a TV show online. You're doing an internet TV show called Seattle Wireless TV, but it's at tv.seattlewireless.net. Why don't you tell us about that project that you're working on?
Sure. I was actually an associate producer at Boeing. And in fact, Boeing had a TV show called Boeing TV. It went on for about 25 years, and I did it about the last 5 or 6 years. When I was there. I've been kind of itching to do something for a while. And I think last year in June, it would have been June 2003, I actually started a new internet TV show called Seattle Wireless TV. And it's basically about how people are using wireless in their homes, their corporate environments, and just innovators from the field. And we've done all kinds of stories about all kinds of people doing wireless. Mm-hmm. I think the one that is probably my most favorite show was one from several months back. We did a story about Yakima County here in Washington State. They have got probably one of the largest and most sophisticated public safety data networks. And mm-hmm. So for folks who don't know what that is, it's basically private data networks for law enforcement. Apparently, out in Yakima, they had a problem with drug interdiction. And so the DEA provided some seed money in terms of allowing them to buy equipment, and they actually put in an 802.11 wireless network covering probably about 650 square miles of Yakima County. It was pretty amazing because I ended up talking to a few of the officers as well as just talking about the technology. And one question that really struck me was when I asked a young officer, if he realized that this was sort of a groundbreaking way of doing business. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, most officers do not fill out their reports online in the cruiser. Most officers don't have access to the driver's license database. They don't have access to, online versions of arrest warrants. I mean, they don't have any of this stuff at their fingertips in the cruiser.
But that's fast. That's fast changing.
Absolutely.
It's coming to those places.
There a lot of law enforcement agencies are still using CDPD over the data modems off the cellular networks. But since this is a true data network, they can literally pull up, for example, one thing they can do is they can actually pull up from the city planning data all of the information relative to what a building layout looks out. So, for example, if they have a hostage situation or some other situation or robbery in progress or whatever, they can actually pull up what the layout of a building looks like before arriving on the scene.
That's
like having, kind of tactical intel, just like the military has.
Well, it could make the difference between life and death in a situation like that.
Yeah, and so, these guys are doing that pretty amazingly. It's been a fun little show. Definitely check it out. It's tv.seattlewireless.net. And we're at about every 2 months.
What month was that one on the Yakima Police Department?
January? I think it was either January or December.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so people can watch it.
Yeah, it's either January 2004 or December 2003.
And that's a fairly heavy download too. So you're going to want to use BitTorrent, right?
That's right.
That leads us into another project that you're working on. Downloadradio.org, and that project, and you're using BitTorrent there. And I'm kind of working on that a little bit with you too. But why don't you tell us about your vision about downloadradio.org?
Well, so one of the things that we discovered is when I started the Seattle Wireless TV show, because we had it in real and Windows media formats, right? So we had streaming files of it. But because we get a lot of traffic, for example, from sites like Slashdot and a lot of the other sort of, heavy geek sites, a lot of those folks wanted to be able to download the content or they were on, for example, on Unix or Linux boxes, and they wanted, to have an MPEG version of the file. Well, of course, it would, as you and I both know, it would bankrupt, most people just to download those files via, just a regular web server.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things that we decided to do was to use this BitTorrent technology, which is a file sharing peer-to-peer technology that's a little different than, some of the other ones like Morpheus and Kazaa, in that it allows you to essentially sort of control the downloads from the perspective that it has sort of three components of the technology. It has what they call a client application that sits obviously on your desktop computer. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, supports Mac and PC and Unix, Linux boxes. It's got what they call a tracker application that sort of keeps track of all of these downloads that are going on. And then it has what they call a CDR application, which is typically a machine that has a complete copy of that file. So you got to have one complete copy of the file out on the internet. But it was originally developed by a guy named Bram Cohen, who lives up here in the Northwest now. And the reason he did it was that he was a Red Hat Linux guy, and he wanted to have the distribution available. Well, of course, this was at the time when Red Hat was coming up with the same problem, which is that they knew that if they were going to put Red Hat 9 out as an HTTP or an FTP download, it would just bankrupt them.
That's what I was going to say. They basically built this technology so it would save them money on bandwidth, right?
Well, no. So Bram actually came up with the technology because at that point, the folks at Red Hat had already said, we ain't going to do it.
Uh-huh.
Right? Oh, okay. So Bram got a little ticked off and said, well, this is stupid, right? And so, and that was almost about a gigabyte ISO file. Mm-hmm. It turned out that one of the things that they discovered about using BitTorrent is that the more people that you use it, the faster your downloads get. And it's just amazing. The amount of bandwidth that gets distributed in a very short amount of time is just amazing. So, that initial rush when you launch a show or you have a new asset come out, because it's very popular, this sort of mitigates a lot of the problems relative to, A, people getting to the file because it's more generally available, and you have tens of thousands mm-hmm. of computers that it's on. But more importantly, it actually delivers a better download experience than if you'd done it sort of the old traditional HTTP or FTP way of doing it. Mm-hmm. So you actually, you know, it's like getting bandwidth for free and getting it for twice as fast.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who wouldn't want that,
well,
right?
That's exactly right. Well, it's also kind of an open source thing, too.
It is, absolutely.
There's people out there developing separate BitTorrent type clients that you can install on your computer that have more functionality and stuff. What are some of the other clients out there that you're seeing?
There is a client called Azurius, which is mm-hmm. Java-based. There's a couple of them. ABC is another one. But to get back to your question about Download Radio. So Download Radio is it's a site that allows you to download radio programming. Mm-hmm. I think everybody loves to, you know, with the propagation of things like your iPod and your other music players, people want to be able to download content and then, you know, take it with them, for example, to put it in their car, you know, car players or wear, you know, wear their headsets when they're out exercising or riding their bike or doing whatever.
Well, a lot of the listeners listening to this show do exactly that.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And so what we've been able to do is we've actually built a database engine that can extract all the metadata. So, for example, mm-hmm. the title and the show description data, it propagates it in the database and then automatically creates a torrent file, which is the sort of file that allows the BitTorrent client to download this particular asset. So we've got pretty much all of the Web Talk Radio for 2004 up. We're working on 2003. And then we have actually probably, I'd say, at least about 2,000 or 3,000 assets in the database today and growing. One of our newest content providers is a guy named Mark Levine from a radio show called Inside Scoop. And Mark reports on the goings-on in Washington, D.C. He's a former legislative assistant. So you get to find out kind of, you know, like all the inside scoop about what's happening in Washington, D.C. before it comes out. So, in fact, Mark was the guy that broke the story about the FBI agent that was doing the translations that was told, you know, not to translate those documents. Mark broke that story probably about 4 weeks before it hit the mainstream media.
Wow.
Yeah, he's really a dynamic speaker, too.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he does a heck of a job with the show, but he does lean a little bit on the left side.
Yeah, he's kind of certainly a liberal left-wing kind of guy. So yeah.
That's all right. We need a few more of those guys on the air.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, but, you know, he brings lots of conservative voices on, so, you know,
That's right. He's balanced, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little more balanced. So. But, we're planning on doing radio shows, and then the next site is going to be called downloadmedia.org, and that's going to be for all of the video and audio and television programming content. In fact, we have it's very reminiscent, especially on the music side. Remember the old Internet Underground Music Archive?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a lot of independent artists that are going to use things like Creative Commons for their work, but we're going to use that to distribute their music online, as well as indie film and indie television programming.
Yeah, what's kind of different about, I think, what you're doing with Download Radio is that you're using BitTorrent for audio files when it's primarily been used for, I think, you know, music and movies and TV shows. And
definitely.
That's primarily where it's being used. Is there any do you think it's going to be used more for radio if you look out in the future?
I think so. I mean, the perfect example I always give to people is that I never forget the NPR Mara Eliason interview with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to the folks over at NPR, and they just got hammered. Apparently, it was one of those great interviews. And, of course, you know, the folks over at NPR just, you know, bemoan the fact that, oh, my God, you know, the bandwidth bill at the end of the month was just horrendous. We got to find different ways and better ways to deliver this content.
Yeah.
So I know folks like BBC are certainly looking at providing a lot of their programming via BitTorrent. They announced that actually last summer. So there are certainly mainstream content producers that are talking about using BitTorrent because it's just, at the end of the day, it's just too expensive to move this content around.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the more popular the content is, the less bandwidth
that's available.
That's being consumed from the content provider's website or servers. So it's really an amazing technology. It almost creates a more of a broadcast distribution model.
It really does, and it overcomes both the speed of download problems as well as the bandwidth bill at the end of the month. So yeah, definitely the more people that are downloading something with BitTorrent, the faster they're going to get it. And oh, by the way, they're saving the content provider a ton of money.
And if you don't have a BitTorrent client right now, just go to downloadradio.org and you can actually download it right off of that website.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Peter, one of the cool things about the downloadradio.org site is that you really have an elaborate search capability in there. And, metadata is something that's is really the only thing that's being used right now to search media files. How is that going to be used as you look out in the future, do you think?
When most people produce content, I think RedTalkRadio is a good example. Both you guys put in the metadata. And so what the metadata is, for example, the show title, that it's the fact that it's mm-hmm. Rob and Dana Greenlee, and what usually the topics are for the show. You guys embed that into the file when you do the encoding process. And so what I've been able to do is extract that metadata out of the files and then pop it into the database. So, for example, when you go to the downloadradio.org site, you can put in a search for all the download or for mm-hmm. all the Web Talk Radio guys shows and say, find me all the shows where they're talking about Microsoft or mm-hmm. Where they're talking about peer-to-peer technology or Wi-Fi or whatever the topic is. And so far, I haven't really seen anything on the internet that does that. I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's other companies that are trying to do that, but haven't really been able to provide that kind of search capability to get you sort of within the last sort of last 10% of it, right?
Yeah.
There are companies that allow you to fully index the video, but it's a very CPU processor intensive transaction to do. And so, of course, they have to monetize that.
Yeah.
Whereas this process, it takes
it's easy, right?
Yeah. It takes less than a second to pull the metadata out of your files.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
but you actually have to put the metadata in the files.
Well, yeah, but
and there's a lot of people that don't put metadata in their streaming media files.
But you'd be surprised. I mean, yeah. A lot of the content producers that I talk to are doing it today. And so I guess that brings up the other issue is that, we're offering this as a suite of services to content producers to really offset the cost of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're offering some free and some pay services for this. And so if there are any content producers that are interested, they should definitely go and talk to us at downloadradio.org, because there are some great opportunities to see some very significant cost savings for the distribution of the show, as well as just expose your show to an entirely different audience. We don't really have too many types of particular genres of content. I wouldn't say we're too tech heavy or too heavy in particular any particular genre.
Real estate.
We have real estate. Yeah. We got a martial arts guys. We got tech guys. We got
politics.
Politics. Yeah. I mean, we got a little bit of everything. So it's a nice place to just find. Oh, hey, I'd like to go check out this guy, or at least see what this show is all about. And suddenly you're like, hey, this is great. I wouldn't have discovered this show unless I had found it online. And then I think that's just the sort of natural way that people search on the internet today. And say, well, I'd like to, do a Google search, right? You say, I want to find all the things on, Wi-Fi or whatever, whatever the topic is.
And also, if you're a fan of Ken Radio, it's probably the only place that you can actually do a search against the archives.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to actually find some of the contents that Ken and Andy have talked about over the years.
As well as Web Talk Radio.
Well, that's exactly right.
As soon
right.
as you get your archive up, then you'll be able to search all the Web Talk Radio guys.
Yep. Right.
And that's the other thing. I mean, like you said, the big benefit for content providers is that they get a cheaper download situation going on for to distribute their content. But I mean, it is really important that their metadata is going to be now searched and available instead of just having listed by date on their own website.
Yeah.
And if anybody makes audio out there, radio or programs like that, and doesn't really have a clue about how to put in that metadata, like Rob referenced, contact downloadradio.org, because they can tell you how to do that.
Yeah, it's really simple. Yeah. I mean, it's really simple.
And you can go back and, you may have to re-encode some of your older shows to put that information
actually you
in.
Don't, actually, you don't.
You don't have to?
No. In fact, at least I know this on a PC. I think you can do it on a Mac as well. You can actually just get the properties of the file and then add the metadata afterwards.
Okay, that's good. So you can actually make all that content-rich history available.
Absolutely.
Well, Peter, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thank
great,
you.
Great to have you in here. And everybody should go check out all of Peter's websites. He's got just tons of them out there.
Run down them again.
We got Seattle Wireless TV, which is tv.seattlewireless.net, which is part of Seattle Wireless, which is a community wireless organization. We have downloadradio.org. my little, I have a consulting company as well, which is YorkSystems.com.
And what kind of consulting do you do?
We do a little bit of everything. We do media and entertainment consulting. We do program development. We do network engineering and design. We do a lot of Wi-Fi applications. So it's a nice little niche set of applications and services we provide that, if you're looking, perfect example, like we build, custom agents for monitoring both hardware and software layer APIs. We do, lots of engineering and implementation, deals. We do, lots of even application development, opportunities, you know, both for e-commerce, for database, for websites. So I've got a great little team of folks working for me right now.
So if a city or a business wants to maybe be a Wi-Fi hotspot for their internet or whatever, they can come in, get consulting from you and
absolutely.
Get the
yeah,
little
we,
things installed. We, and
we've actually done a number of municipal Wi-Fi opportunities. So
that's really good.
Yeah.
And your entertainment part of it, what do you?
Yeah, so we do a lot of work with entertainment companies, with digital rights management, mm-hmm. With obviously this whole idea of searching their media assets, mm-hmm. So cataloging, content management systems, yeah, as well as content delivery solutions. So
good.
Great, Peter. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stay connected. Up next, we'll be joined by Mitchell Baker. She's president of the Mozilla Foundation, and she'll discuss the Mozilla and Firefox web browsers.
This is Web Talk Radio. Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
It's all about convenience. Serenade Audio is a revolutionary new service that's redefining the MP3 player listening experience, allowing you to listen to what you want, when you want, anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. With Serenade Audio, you can download Web Talk Guys, plus over 300 news, talk, sports, and entertainment programs are available as well, and they can all be downloaded to your MP3 player with just one click. Easy and convenient. Now, for a limited time, when you sign up for Serenade Audio, you'll receive over 100 music channels for your PC absolutely free. To learn more, visit Serenade Audio on the web at serenadesystems.com/webtalk.
You have probably heard about the three big online threats we face every day when online. They're talked about on the news all the time and on web talk, like unknown spyware and adware that may invade your PC. Spyware tracks your keystrokes and harvests passwords and sends this info to criminals all over the world. The other two are online identity theft and spam. But have you actually done something about these vulnerabilities on your PC? I'm very excited to tell you about a sponsor offer that is for web talk listeners only. A very special package that cannot be beat that will keep your PC safe and secure. You may have heard about the folks at Anonymizer Software, and they are offering a 3-pack software bundle that includes Anonymizer 2004, Anonymizer Spyware Killer, and Mail Shell Anti-Spam Desktop. And that is a complete and total privacy solution and will clean up any and all of your hidden problems and make your computer invisible on the net. Being a listener to the show, and thanks to the folks at Anonymizer, you qualify for a $40 discount on the $90 software package and get the complete Anonymizer bundle for only $49.95. All you have to do to get the discount is visit getprivatenow.com and enter my first name, Rob. And that is getprivatenow.com and just enter my first name.
The Web Talk Guys, here and now.
You're back with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is in here with me, ready to roll.
You remember back in the 90s, you remember when the Netscape browser was the browser? There was no IE at that point. Back in the early days of the net, we all used Netscape, and it's still around. but it did give birth to an open source sibling, and the browser sibling name is Mozilla. Remember the Mozilla monster?
Yeah.
Well, the original development project name of the Netscape browser was created by Mark Andreessen. Now, Mozilla is making a comeback without the Netscape name.
Yes, and we are joined by Mitchell Baker, who's the president of the Mozilla Foundation, and she's going to discuss how Mozilla and the Firefox web browser is built in a true, pure, open-source development process, and why the development process for this nonprofit organization may be a significant and industry-changing way software gets written now and in the future. And she's also going to tell us about the Mozilla's cool alternative web browser and the powerful Thunderbird email program. Mitchell, it's great to have you on the program with us. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Rob. It's my pleasure.
Why don't you tell us a bit more about the Mozilla Foundation and kind of how it's structured?
The Mozilla Foundation is an independent nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have our IRS tax exemption, so we are the sort of 501c3 that people are accustomed to, that you make donations to, and so on. The Mozilla Foundation itself is relatively new. It's just over a year old. Of course, the Mozilla project has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And there was a group of people who organized and managed the project known as Mozilla.org staff.
Oh, okay.
But there was never a legal organization. It was a virtual organization. And that worked well for a number of years. It was always in the back of our minds that an independent organization would make sense. And then about a year ago, all of the necessary elements came together, and we were actually able to realize our long-term goal and establish this organization.
Oh, okay, so Mozilla.org actually existed before the Mozilla Foundation, so
yes.
That was a spinoff of that. And why did you guys form the foundation? Was it kind of a fundraiser type of reason for founding that to support the Mozilla.org development?
Yes.
Okay.
There were several reasons, and one is to have a fundraising venue and also an employment venue to maintain a core group of people.
Okay.
Another reason is, it turns out that the Mozilla Project has always been a project that tries to bring together open source DNA and open source volunteers and developers with commercial software developers and distributors. That's
mm-hmm.
a heritage of the founding by Netscape.
Oh, yeah.
And so it turned out that many of these commercial entities really didn't know how to approach Mozilla.org staff.
Mm-hmm.
As a virtual organization, there were sort of a pretty elaborate management system, but it was very hard to find. It was opaque. And so people would either try to go to Netscape or maybe to AOL, or they would give up. And so the foundation is a way for people to actually find us and to deal with us and to know who we are and how we operate.
Yeah, and that leads into the next question is, what is the connection between what you're doing and the Mozilla Foundation and Netscape, or is there any connection?
Our relationship with Netscape
mm-hmm.
would be the same as it is with any other commercial entity that's interested in our technology.
Okay.
So Netscape is free, if it wishes, to hire engineers and have their work product contributed to the project, and it's also free to take the code back in return and use that code as the basis of its own product.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like a real win-win for Netscape.
Well, Netscape contributed many employees for many, many years and shipped a Mozilla-based browser for a number of years as well. I think recently the number of employees that Netscape has declined mm-hmm. quite dramatically. I don't know what that number is now. It could even be zero. So But I have read in the news that they're releasing an update to the browser, so they're mm-hmm. still using our code.
So it seems like that the development of the code, it really overlaps between the two browsers quite a bit.
The Mozilla browser has been the basis of the Netscape product line for a while.
I mm-hmm.
Netscape's on its 7.x releases, mm-hmm. and those are all Netscape browsers. I don't know what their plans are in the future. And they have taken the Mozilla code base and changed some things and added some other things. So, yes, for those people who use Netscape, say, 7 browsers, you're actually using core Mozilla technology.
Oh, interesting.
There's a chunk of other companies that are starting to ship Mozilla-based browsers, which aren't as clear, but clearly the Linux distributors and OS companies are also involved in shipping Mozilla-based browsers.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the open source product development process that you guys go through with your product? And now, are you guys finding that the development process is a lot faster when it's open to, you know, a large group of developers out there? And what kind of checks and balances do you guys have on the code quality, those kind of things, in the development of the software products that you guys have?
Oh, that's a great question. So the way our project works is pretty structured, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Mozilla project is big in terms of lines of code and complexity and so on. So what we have done is broken the code base into logical chunks, which we call modules.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Mozilla.org staff in the past and Mozilla Foundation now delegate authority to those modules to the people with the most expertise.
Oh, okay.
And so we have the Mozilla.org staff and Foundation staff retain ultimate decision making authority over that code base. But we delegate authority out to people with expertise in particular areas. And so if you are the module owner for a particular piece of code, you have two basic responsibilities. You're responsible for the day-to-day operation and improvement and development of that code,
mm-hmm.
and for vetting whatever code goes into your module. And you're also responsible for some long-term planning. What do you think ought to happen with that module? And then periodically we canvass the modules at, you know, at the leadership level and say, well, what are you thinking of doing with your modules, and do they fit with the overall project goals, or mm-hmm. maybe you've got a great idea and the rest of us ought to think about it.
Okay.
Beyond that, we also have a highly structured review process for our code. I've learned that many people somehow, they think that open source projects are sort of chaotic or anarchistic. Mm. And sometimes people think, well, there's sort of the code base exists and, you know, developers randomly sort of throw code at it and see what sticks. But in fact, our process is highly structured and more so than many proprietary companies that I've come across. So the way it works, as I've described, is we have module owners.
Mm-hmm.
Every piece of code that gets checked into our source code repository needs first to be included in our issue and bug tracking system.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a bug tracking system. It's called Bugzilla. Almost everything goes in there.
Yeah.
And if you are working on a patch, you're not allowed to just check it into the tree.
Mm-hmm.
First thing that has to happen is there needs to be a bug open on it, and you need to take your patch and attach it to the bug with a sort of diff file
mm-hmm.
so that it's easy to tell what you're changing. And mm-hmm. then after that, you need to get it reviewed. And the module owner for that module needs to review that code. If you're the module owner and you wrote it, then you need to have a peer review it. So it always has that level of review. And until the reviewer has added his or her approval into the bug, it doesn't get checked into the tree.
Oh, okay.
And beyond that, in certain cases, many cases, we have a second level of review that says, well, okay, it's okay in the module. How does it fit overall? And then when you get those approvals, then you check it into the tree. We have a system that tracks every check into the tree. You can see it. You can see if it breaks the build. You can see who checked it in. You can see when. So all of that information is available, and so we can track very carefully what goes into the tree, what problem we thought it was addressing, and whether it actually did that.
So who actually owns this code? You keep talking about how these code creators, they actually own that code. Is that a monetary relationship? I mean, are they getting paid for creating that code for you guys?
When I use the word term own there, I actually don't mean in a legal sense of property ownership. What I meant
it's
was
a responsibility.
Yes, exactly. That they are responsible for that piece of code.
Okay.
But that does still beg the question, are these guys doing it out of the you know, gold of their heart? You know what I mean?
Right. You know, people participate in the project for a whole range of reasons. So there has always been, in the Mozilla project, a core set of developers that were paid to work full-time on the project.
Mm-hmm.
But that came out of, again, the Netscape heritage, and it is true today. So at the Mozilla Foundation, we hire a core set of people so that they can devote full-time effort to leading a community of people. In addition to that, there's always been a very active volunteer community and an active set of people employed by other companies.
Mm-hmm.
I guess people employed by other companies weren't true at the very founding of the project, but it's been true for many years. So our community has got three sets of people, those employed by the foundation, those employed by other companies, and volunteers. Mm-hmm. On the volunteer side, people often wonder, why would someone do it?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of reasons. Some people are really drawn to technology, and I liken them to artists.
Mm-hmm.
There are dancers and painters and writers who pursue that whether or not they're paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of technologists who are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one set of people. There's another set of people, and they're honing their technical skills. Right? Either they're students or they want to retrain themselves to move into some other area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a third set of people who are not fulfilled in their work life. They may be technologists. They may actually be working in some other field but have good technical skills.
Mm-hmm.
And they participate because they do get a sense of fulfillment. We actually have a real community of people, and if you're doing useful things, people notice it and they help you and you get to participate and you see what's happening and you see your work included in this product, and then when we ship our browser, you and X million other people get to see the fruits of your efforts.
Okay, well, I'm sure a lot of the development comes from companies that are trying to customize your product for maybe a solution that they want to build internally. Is that where some of the code comes from, too, is pieces of other products that are being developed by other companies?
There's some of that. On the people employed by other companies or the other companies, there's two types of things that happen. There's a set of companies that contribute to the core itself, meaning they contribute to the code that we, the Mozilla Foundation, ship. Probably the operating system companies are the easiest to understand in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So Sun has a team of Mozilla engineers. IBM has a team of Mozilla engineers. Red Hat has a set of Mozilla engineers who are very interested in the core.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other companies who build on top or use pieces of our technology in their product. What they tend to contribute back are some patches to the core and also information and improvements about how to use that technology in their products, so how to make them more general.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a conversation with Mitchell Baker. She's president of the Mozilla Foundation, responsible for the Mozilla browser. We'll have more with Mitchell in a moment. Stay connected. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
As a man,
you have probably heard about the three big online threats we face every day when online. They're talked about on the news all the time and on web talk, like unknown spyware and adware that may invade your PC. Spyware tracks your keystrokes and harvests passwords and sends this info to criminals all over the world. The other two are online identity theft and spam. But have you actually done something about these vulnerabilities on your PC? I'm very excited to tell you about a sponsor offer that is for web talk listeners only. A very special package that cannot be beat that will keep your PC safe and secure. You may have heard about the folks at Anonymizer Software, and they are offering a three-pack software bundle that includes Anonymizer 2004, Anonymizer Spyware Killer, and MailShell Anti-Spam Desktop. And that is a complete and total privacy solution and will clean up any and all of your hidden problems and make your computer invisible on the net. Being a listener to the show, and thanks to the folks at Anonymizer, you qualify for a $40 discount on the $90 software package and get the complete Anonymizer bundle for only $49.95. All you have to do to get the discount is visit getprivatenow.com and enter my first name, Rob. And that is getprivatenow.com and just enter my first name. Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. Welcome back to Web Talk Radio. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is in here on the other mic.
And joining us again is Mitchell Baker. She's president of the Mozilla Foundation. We're in the middle of talking about Mozilla and the suite of services in Thunderbird and Firefox.
So would you say that this model that you've just described to us is really the model for software development coming in the future, more than what we've seen up to this point?
I'd say that it is an effective model,
mm-hmm.
More effective and certainly more disciplined and structured than many people realize.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a tremendously structured environment. Yeah,
it is, actually. Yeah. It comes from having, you know, many developers, and we've always been an open source project that has lived in a time-pressured setting,
mm-hmm.
and always where there were commercial entities relying heavily on releases at a certain time frame. So mm-hmm. we've been driven to that. It works very well. So I definitely think that it is a model for the future, but I wouldn't say it's the only model or the best model or it's going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Mozilla project has been one of the early ones.
Yeah.
As I said, try and combine this commercial and volunteer effort. There are others now, and I don't think we've reached the end of the road. I think we'll continue improving.
Well, Mitchell, you may not want to say it, but I would say it's probably the best model because, I mean, just listening to your structure of checks and balances, that's what makes anything coming out of the Mozilla project pretty much bug-free, I would think, by the end, which is much more than we can say from a certain Redmond company or anything like that, you know?
Well, that's really gracious. I wouldn't say our software is bug-free. Unfortunately, it's pretty hard to get to be bug-free.
Yeah.
People are people, whether they're at a commercial software company or versus an open source. I'm sure mistakes happen. It's just the checks and balances that catch those, I'm sure.
Yes, and we have a very active testing community, which people don't think of when they think of open source.
Yeah.
But over the history of the Mozilla project, it turns out that a product like a browser that exists on many different kinds of machines and connects with many different kinds of servers is very hard to test.
No, that's mm-hmm. true.
Oh, it
but,
is.
Right, the lab you would need would be enormous. And so we get, hundreds of thousands of downloads on any milestone, and in some cases up to, a million. Our last Firefox download was, in the millions. And so those allow us a set of testing and responses that would be hard to get any other way. And so our quality when we do label something, say a 1.0 quality, mm-hmm. is more than you could expect. And certainly if you tried to do that testing, it would be phenomenally expensive. So that's an element that I think the Mozilla project has pioneered that doesn't get as much play, or doesn't get discussed as much as its value would
sure.
suggest.
What do you guys do in the area of marketing? It seems like the Mozilla products are known pretty widely online to a certain extent. But when you look at some of the other more commercial software companies out there, they have a development and marketing process that enables them to run TV advertising and to do a lot of things that can actually get the word out about their products. Is that something that you guys are trying to address? And where do you see the future of that, or the marketing of your software?
Well, we're doing more marketing,
mm-hmm.
which isn't hard because until recently we did zero. Before the Mozilla Foundation existed and it was a virtual sort of organization, mm-hmm. it was much more of an engineering organization, and the end-user product really was the Netscape browser.
Mm-hmm.
That's changed in the last year as we've really focused on the end-user, and our new Firefox and Thunderbird products have appeared. So we have started trying to do some marketing, but of course we don't have those kinds of budgets.
Yeah.
So we get very good word-of-mouth marketing, and we started a sort of marketing campaign. If you go to the website, you can see our really initial efforts to try and get the user base that we have
mm-hmm.
to spread the word,
yeah.
to help us with various marketing-related activities, starting again more at the technical end of the consumer base and moving from there. Now, one thing we found that's been very interesting to us is even without much marketing, our products, especially the Firefox product, are starting to reach a much more general level of consumers than we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that because we get donations. We've had thousands of donations, PayPal donations, small checks in the $20, $25 range, and a lot of them come with notes. And in those notes, you can see that it's a wide range of people who have actually found this product somehow. Mm-hmm. But it is an ongoing goal to figure out, how do we actually let people know about this? Because mm-hmm. generally when people try Firefox and Thunderbird, they really like them.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, when the Department of Homeland Security CERT group, which is the computer security group, made their recommendation in June in response to the IE security vulnerabilities, which was to maybe use a different browser if you want to get away from these problems.
Well, yeah, we talked about it a lot on our show back during that time when they were recommending not to use IE.
Right. Well, we saw a big uptick in downloads in that period.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So it is starting to reach further, but that has been a challenge for us. And so we've just actually started some programs and are trying to figure out what can we do that isn't a standard marketing program. We're never going to buy TV ads.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and this is a good example. I mean, just coming on our show and talking about it. I mean, we're going to help you with that word of mouth. And, you know, I think a lot of people have heard now of Firefox, and they certainly know the name Mozilla, and you mentioned Thunderbird. But we only have a few minutes left, but I want you to just run down the list of products, Camino, and such that you have that people aren't aware of.
Sure. So the product that we've had the longest that most people know of is the Mozilla Application Suite. It goes by the 1.x. We're up to 1.7 release now. And that's the combined browser, email, news, reader, chat, so on. A lot of people know that. It's a big application. It does a lot of things. It's got a lot of functionality, but it's a big application for a lot of people. That application has sort of two basic pieces. One is the underlying infrastructure that the end user almost never sees, and then there's the application layer on top of that. Mm-hmm. What we have done in the last year or 18 months is to rewrite the application layer. So we have a new browser known as Mozilla Firefox and a new email client, Mozilla Thunderbird. The application layer itself is totally new and great. Mm-hmm. The underlying layer of the infrastructure is the same. So we get the benefit of all the stability and the maturity and the performance that we've spent years developing in the infrastructure, plus the benefits of lightweight, next-generation, new browsing and mail applications on top. And those have turned out to be really killer products.
So when you actually download the Mozilla browser, are you getting Firefox and Thunderbird installed with that download, or is it best to get them separately?
So if you download the Mozilla Application Suite, or what we call Mozilla 1.7, you are getting the mature, older product that combines all of those things together. You do not get Firefox and Thunderbird. You get the old applications. If you want the new one, you would go and look for Mozilla Firefox and download that. If you want our new email application, you get Mozilla Thunderbird.
Now, would that Firefox basically replace your Mozilla browser if you download it, or it's a totally separate application?
It's a totally separate application.
Okay. Okay, interesting.
Right, because in the Mozilla Application Suite, the applications are intertwined at many different layers.
Okay.
And so you can use Mozilla Firefox plus the mail in the old Mozilla Application Suite if you want. There's nothing to stop you from doing that.
Sure.
But since the applications are totally new, they're different enough, you can't pull a piece out and replace it.
Why did you guys make a Firefox browser the separate from the Mozilla browser when you could have just updated the Mozilla browser with a new code base or a new layer, I guess, is what you were saying?
Right. So the Mozilla browser would be the browser inside the Mozilla application suite. And that browser, you know, over time, you know, had become both the browser and sort of an application launcher for all the rest of the things in the suite. We actually created a new toolkit to create the new application. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to keep the existing 1.x product line alive and vibrant and updated and usable for all the people who are using it and like it and want to continue, while at the same time do something separate for people who wanted a very lightweight, modern new application.
Okay.
So that's why we did two separate things for a while.
Yeah. Why don't you run through with us really quick in the last minute or so here, if a software developer out there maybe wants to contribute to the Mozilla Foundation, whether it be in code or financial support or whatever, how they would do that?
So the first thing to do, of course, is to visit our website. Mm-hmm. If it's a financial donation, it's pretty easy. You'll see a donate or a supportmozilla.org link. Follow that link, and that will tell you if you want PayPal or, you know, write a check or whatever you want to do. you're actually interested in the project, you know, at the top of the website, there's a button that says for developers. And if you click on that, you'll be back, you know, in our developer area. And you can look at the tools. Really, a lot of people start in the sort of testing and QA area because it's an easier way to get familiar with the projects. We have an IRC channel, which you'll find on that page as well, for developers to come chat with us and join the various chat sessions and some of our QA sessions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is there's a sort of independent fan zine online, mozillazine.org, and that's got a lot of information about especially the new products and forums for help and how to get involved and so on.
Okay, terrific. And the browser and the email client are all free, right?
Yes, everything is free.
And is there at any point in time in the future are you guys going to charge for those, or are they? Do you see them being free forever?
We see them free forever.
Really? That's great.
Yep, we are, and yes, we are.
That's great. Mitchell, thank you for joining us. It was great to speak with you.
Oh, likewise.
We appreciate it, and we'll support you and mention it as much as we can as you come out with your new products. Just let us know.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
You've been listening to a conversation with Mitchell Baker. She's the president of the Mozilla Foundation. You can find out more at mozilla.org. And that brings us to the end of another Web Talk for the week. Thanks so much for joining us. We've loved being in your ears all this time.
And thank you for letting us into your lives, and we look forward to having you listen to the show next week. And between now and then, go visit our website at webtalkradio.com, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.